7:41 here on the Mighty 690. And now we have, well, at least our last chat with Derek Schmidt as Attorney General. I don't want to say it's our last chat because we want him to come on as often as possible. But good morning, sir. We have you on the line. How are you doing?
Good morning, James. Thanks. Good to be back with you.
Absolutely. No, it's just a real pleasure, as always, to be able to talk with you. And, of course, you know, we were all rooting for our Southeast Kansas guy for governor. But, you know, sometimes things just don't work out. But, hey, we're still glad to have you. And we really thank you for, I didn't realize it was 12 years of service here as Attorney General. I mean, that's amazing.
Well, thank you. Yes, it's been a good run. It's been a long run, 12 years as Attorney General and 10 years in the Senate before that. So 22 years of public service with the privilege of representing Southeast Kansas and later all of Kansas. And I'm just so grateful for that opportunity. And I like to think that we've been able to make some positive contributions to our state and the folks, our neighbors, the folks that live here over the course of that time.
Well, for sure. And I mean, that is a long time to be able to, you know, be in public service. I know it's not always easy. It's not always the most glamorous job. But I mean, just going through some of your accomplishments here, I was just reading through the press release that you sent out here just a couple of days ago. $1.1 billion for Kansas consumers and taxpayers. I mean, that is quite an accomplishment as far as, you know, only spending $300 million running for office. I mean, that you said there's a nearly 4-to-1 return on investment?
Yeah, that is true. You know, the Attorney General's office is the state's law firm. We have many other functions, but that's one that people often think of. And, you know, we're not a private law firm. Our mission is not to make any money. We're not a private business. I'm quick to say that. But having said that, I think it is useful to take a look at some of the bottom line dollars and cents. And through our consumer work, our tobacco litigation, some of our other anti-fraud work and recoveries, you know, we have brought $1.1 billion back to Kansas and Kansans over the last 12 years. That is by far the most that any Kansas Attorney General's administration has ever recovered for the state. And as you point out, over the same 12 years, we've spent, every nickel added up, we've spent a little less than $300 million running the office. So, you know, that is a rate of return of about 4-to-1. And actually, it's going to be a bit more than that because we also have that $1.1 billion in recoveries just counts money that's already back and in pocket or in the bank. It doesn't count money that is ordered to be recovered through the opioid litigation that we have ongoing. But that's real money. It's going to happen. And that's going to be, by the time the dust all settles, that'll be probably close to another $350 million. So it's going to be very close to $1.5 billion recovered. And, you know, it's not something we run around and talk about every day just because it's just not something we talk about every day. But it's something our team is really proud of, and I hope taxpayers are pleased with it.
And I know 12 years is a long time to look back, but is there anything that sticks out as maybe a big accomplishment, some sort of thing that you're really proud of during your time here in public office and specifically as Attorney General?
Well, there are several things that I think have sort of been hallmarks for us, but a couple that maybe haven't been, you know, they're not coffee shop talk, but we have really focused on our watch on building capacity to investigate and prosecute two groups of crimes in particular, crimes against children, whether it's sex crimes against kids or violent crimes against kids, and also elder abuse, crimes against older people, two very vulnerable populations that sometimes those crimes can be especially difficult to investigate and prosecute because of their nature. And so, you know, we've really focused on them. Our team, I'm very proud of our team. They have convicted and sent to prison for life sentences more child sexual abusers than any other Attorney General's administration in the history of our state. And we've also prosecuted more elder abuse cases than any previous administration. And hopefully, I mean, we're going to leave my successor the ability to continue on those paths, and I hope that he'll continue to do that.
Now, of course, you know, being in Topeka and public office for a while here, have you seen many changes, I guess? You know, I'm sure there's a lot of changes in, you know, the makeup of the legislature. I mean, things go through cycles. But has there been any big picture changes that you've seen in Topeka, good or bad, during your time in office?
Oh, goodness. You know, there are, of course, lots of changes. Society changes, expectations change. And so, you know, lots of things. I suppose one that's structural that maybe isn't talked about as much, the nature of the press corps covering public policy, just covering the state house, the legislature, has really changed dramatically. And in my view, overall, not for the better. It's not a criticism of anyone in particular. It's just, you know, when I started, there were, I don't know, five or six different news organizations had state house bureaus, and they were all pretty much seasoned reporters. You could expect some pretty thoughtful coverage, pretty dull coverage sometimes of budget issues or just you know, more in-depth reporting. And now it's, I don't know, it tends to be kind of like society as a whole. It's more, it's headline grabbing, it's headline chasing, it's a little less thoughtful. And I think that's unfortunate because it's hard to have a self-governing society where one of the principal means of people having discourse about public issues and their nuances is sort of limited. So, again, I don't mean that to bash the press. That's not my point. It's just you asked about changes, and that's a major structural change in how information flows both to and from elected policymakers in Topeka that we haven't talked about perhaps as much in Kansas.
I think that's a good observation, and I mean, it's something that we have seen even more at the local level, where you have maybe, you know, news organizations that can't afford to pay people as much anymore, and they can't cover some of these, you know, more local meetings, and so, you know, likewise, we kind of start losing some of those checks and balances maybe on local government, just as, you know, the public doesn't know what's happening. But yeah, I can see what you're talking about there at the state level, just as, you know, journalism is going through some changes, and you know, it's something that we, of course, are very interested in on our end, and keeping track of that. And of course, you know, we're always trying to present things as balanced as we possibly can, but some places they're not as interested in that. And so I think that is a really good observation. The other question I had is there anything that surprised you most during your time, you know, in office and as AG? Anything that that kind of sticks out to you as you reflect on your time?
Oh, gosh, surprised. I hadn't really thought of it.
Sure.
In those terms, I don't know that surprised is, I don't know that I have an answer to that.
Okay.
I think,
and you know, sometimes I think,
you know, it's been a long run, and
it's hard to look back. You
know, I started serving before smartphones were invented. I mean, I don't mean to make myself sound ancient, but you know, when I started, the principal means of hearing from constituents was a snail mail letter that somebody sat down and wrote or typed or printed and mailed. And you know, now we get very few of those, but the volume of communication is through the roof. I mean, I can think of one issue, I got like 28,000 emails on it, and that's just one illustration, a fairly extreme one, but one illustration. So, you know, I don't know if that's a surprise, but it does sort of change the nature of the discourse, and you know, we all have to adapt to that.
Sure, it's a lot to keep up with. And I mean, I guess another question I had is, you know, we've been hearing some about, you know, you working with other states and especially challenging some stuff that's come from the federal government. I mean, anything from Obamacare, Affordable Care Act sort of thing, to these changes in some of the emission rules, and also most recently the vaccine mandate. Do you want to talk at all about that?
Yeah, that's an area, that's a role or a duty or a function of state attorneys general that really we've been part of pioneering. Half a generation ago, just state AGs weren't really much involved in challenging federal actions. And when they were, it was usually on a pretty narrow, focused preemption type of argument that, you know, state authority generically versus federal authority. Now, really starting with Obamacare back in 2010 and moving to today, now a large role of state attorneys general, both Republicans and Democrats around the country, is in what I often call policing the boundaries of federalism. When the federal government takes actions that are perhaps not just bad as a policy matter for a particular state, but are also illegal. They exceed the power that an agency has been given by Congress, or they exceed the power that Congress has under our federal constitution. State AGs have really stepped into that void, and sought legal recourse. And what was such an unusual thing back in 2010 when we first started is now very commonplace. We challenged dozens of federal actions. And just yesterday, we asked the U.S. Supreme Court, I was one of 19 state attorneys general, asked the U.S. Supreme Court to step in and take a look and block the effort to repeal Title 42, which is the public health measure that's being used to try to limit some amount of illegal border crossings at the southern U.S.-Mexico border. We filed that application yesterday, early in the day, and by the end of the day, Chief Justice John Roberts had entered a stay and blocked repeal of Title 42, at least long enough to take a look at things and see if what the legalities of that are. That would have been unthinkable 15 years ago for state AGs to play that role, and now it's a fairly common type of action. And so, I think it's necessary. I think it's unfortunate that it's necessary, but I think it is necessary in large part because Congress has become so dysfunctional. It just doesn't get much done. And as a result of that, people who want things to happen or not happen, they turn to other means. They ask federal agencies to sort of bootstrap themselves into authority, take actions that are not clearly authorized by Congress. And the only check and balance on that is in the courtroom with states pushing back.
Sure. Now, have there been any projects that, you've started, any programs that you're looking forward to seeing go forward after you're out of office? Anything that sticks out to you in that regard that you'd like to kind of see continue?
Well, I mentioned already the capacity we built with respect to child abuse investigations and prosecutions and also elder abuse investigations and prosecutions. I hope that continues, and frankly, I hope it expands. We could use more capacity in the state for both of those, not less. Another I might just mention, the construction of the Kansas Bureau of Investigation Forensic Science Laboratory in Topeka, that obviously will continue. We could get that job done. It was years in the making, and we finally were able to get a breakthrough and get it done on our watch. Now we have modern forensic science capacity. It's much closer to the volume of capacity we need in the state than it was beforehand. That makes a difference in terms of making local law enforcement agencies able, have the tools to move cases along more quickly and without the types of bottlenecks we used to see, at least there are fewer of them. And we also, by partnering with Washburn University in Topeka to build that new forensics lab on their campus, Washburn stood up a training program, so now Kansas kids that want to become forensic scientists can stay right here in Kansas. They can get their degree. They can be our interns as they're going through college, and hopefully then choose to remain in Kansas and practice their trade and provide a pipeline of talent. So everybody wins in this deal, and that's why I look forward to seeing it work many years into the future.
How about the Kansas public school funding system? I mean, we talk a lot about, we hear a lot about public school funding. You said you helped the legislature and three governors return that funding to compliance. What exactly does that mean?
Well, Kansas has been in the middle of school finance litigation for as long as I can remember. There's a provision in the Kansas Constitution that speaks to school funding, and unfortunately, in my view at least, a lot of times over the last 20-plus years, disputes about the amount of money and how it's spent that are made available to our public schools, such a very important function, wind up being decided in court and not through the people's elected representatives in the legislature. I think that's unfortunate because I think it generates sort of hostility that is really unhelpful and unnecessary. But nonetheless, that's where we are. So, I've lived through two rounds of school finance litigation on my watch, the first in the state Senate, where as majority leader I helped put together the coalition that finally got us into compliance with what the court said was sufficient. And we were in compliance for maybe 2 or 3 years in a row before the 2008 housing bubble popped, the economy tanked. Governor Parkinson, who was in office at the time, actually wound up cutting school funding pretty substantially. A lot of that cut was sort of temporarily masked because, not unlike the current time, there was a wave of federal money that Congress sent into the states because of the national economic situation. And that money backfilled a piece of the hole from the Parkinson-era cuts. But then you know, that money went away as the current money would go away from Washington. And the hole became apparent, and the state then spent another nearly decade trying to refill it. That time, I served in the Attorney General's office, and our job was to defend the laws. The legislature wrote it. We did that consistently. We also counseled them on how they could get back into compliance, and ultimately they did. In 2018, when Jeff Collier was governor, the state came back into compliance, but for a very small piece that was fixed the next year. And so, you know, the long story, only slightly shorter, public education is such a critically important part of what we do in all of our communities. We are at this moment in Kansas history where we can actually have, I think, some thoughtful discussions on how we want to improve the delivery of education services to our kids, do better for them, and not be dragged into court over it. And I really hope we can stay in that posture. That's where we're going to leave things as I leave office. And I hope we can stay in that posture because, you know, when you're in the middle of litigation, it's not a conducive time to have thoughtful discussions about how to improve the system.
And as we wrap up with about a minute here, sir, anything that you'd like to say to your successor, Chris Kobach, as he is going to be coming into office?
Well, I wish Chris well. We've been working very closely with his team on the transition. As I said earlier, we're going to hand the office off in better shape than we found it, and that's a measure of success for me. And I hope he builds on many of the things we got right and goes beyond that and fixes things we may not have gotten quite so right. Very important office. It's been a privilege to serve. I know he'll think the same as his service goes along, and I'm sure he'll serve Kansas as well.
And, sir, of course, now that you're exiting this role, any plans as you take a little a break from public office?
Well, I don't know exactly what we're going to do yet. Three more weeks, I'll get extricated from the AG's office, and then we'll take a deep breath and, and figure out what's next. You know, I am told that there are jobs that pay a little better, and we'll see about that. Not complaining, just saying. But I'm just grateful for the opportunity to have served and look forward to whatever the Lord has in mind for me going forward.
Well, of course. But I think you deserve just a little break and then maybe start a new adventure. But I appreciate you giving us time here on the Mighty 690 to chat every month. I mean, it's been an honor and a privilege for me to be able to talk with you just these past months. And I hope that we can have you on again real soon. And, of course, stop by anytime you're in the area.
Sounds great. Thank you, James. Take care.
All right. Merry Christmas. Attorney General here, Derek Schmidt, on the Mighty 690.